Did you listen to
the
banter that we had? I would say it was probably amongst the best banter. It was really good. I think that it's really just, it's extremely realistic. It's very affable. It's improved. It's improved. Deliciously subtle that you hi, how's it going? Looks like we're in the throes of recording these days. I'm happy to be here. Welcome to Know It All with Tay and Kay. I'm Tay.
I'm Kay.
And we've got a really special episode for you. I know it's been a little while since we've had anything out for you, but I think the extra time added is definitely going to be worth it for the research that we conducted.
We had to do a lot of research because we're talking about a very dense topic tonight.
A very heavy topic, if you will. It must be, because it's gravity. So I think we should just dive right into this, you know? I think we should just answer the simple question, what is gravity?
Here, let me ask you, Taylor, what is gravity?
Well, gravity is just kind of one of those basic laws of nature, and it states that objects with mass attract one another. It's not very well understood why. The how is the best way that we understand it. But basically what we've grasped is that the more mass something has, the more gravity it exerts.
This is why people are naturally drawn to things like mountains and water.
And, you know, fat people, because they seem so huggable.
Mm-hmm.
But even something as large as the Pacific Ocean exerts a small amount of gravity.
It's so small, in fact, that someone, a human being or an animal other than a fish, can, under their own force, remove themselves from the gravitational pull of the ocean, even after being submerged within it.
But a little guppy or a piece of algae is going to have a lot of trouble doing so.
The gravity's too strong.
Their mass relative to the Pacific Ocean is just too little, so they're stuck forever, and that's where they'll be. The Earth, on the other hand, in total, is absolutely enormous, so the gravity is so strong that most human beings, me and Kevin can really, we're good jumpers, but we can still only jump a couple of feet in the air straight up.
Yeah, before we're sucked right back down towards the center of the Earth.
But if we were on the moon, we wouldn't have any trouble jumping at all. We could go
15 feet in the air.
10 feet in the air.
We would have trouble not jumping.
We would have trouble not doing somersaults and doing acrobatic trips that would
back flips, moonsaults. That's why they're called moonsaults. Front flips.
Triple Lutzes, spins. We could do all of those
things. Gravity on the moon is so little that a helium-filled balloon would rocket out of the moon's atmosphere, and a rocket ship would propel itself out of the atmosphere with the propulsion of something that only the greatest scientific minds can dream of with the
a rocket ship or something.
Yeah.
So gravity, it wasn't always understood by human beings. We had lots of competing theories about why you fell or why objects fell, but once it really caught on and once we grasped it, it was loved because of its simplicity and its indisputable factor.
Everywhere around the world, people, when they first heard of gravity, were like, oh, that makes sense, because if I drop this apple or ball of yarn that I was working on, then it will fall to the ground.
And there's nothing I can do about that.
Right. Let's do a little experiment here. Taylor, defy gravity. He didn't do it.
I couldn't do it.
He could not do it. It's physically impossible for us to defy gravity.
Now, all of the things that we've discussed here on have shown you that we know how gravity works, but we don't really get it. Gravity is really poorly understood. We only know that it compels objects towards one another and how to describe these effects.
And all but the most brash physicists describe them with differential equations.
You know, some of my favorite pieces of literature are differential equations.
Which ones?
The moment of inertia of a given body is the sum of the assembly of each individual mass times the distance from a given point.
As you know, inertia is a pretty sore subject for me. I can joke about it, but if we're talking equations, I prefer the classics. Yeah. Net force equals the product of a mass times the derivative of its linear momentum over derived time.
Newton, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to him later.
You know, my dad used to say that one all the time.
How is your dad since the accident?
Well, see for yourself. He's right over there.
Can he hear us?
Yeah, he's all ears. Only ears, in a way.
Can he talk?
Yeah, he has this special mouth-operated keyboard, but the computer voice is, it's disquieting, so I just turn it off.
Yeah, you wouldn't want all that, you know, family stuff on the show. So gravity.
Gravity is what you make of it. The rules of gravity are not so, were not once so firmly fixed in place as they are now. It really takes a staunch figure to say, this is a rule of physics, and you people have to follow it from now on.
A staunch figure? You mean someone possibly like Aristotle?
A figure of great authority like Aristotle. He was actually the first person to hypothesize gravity. He said that the universe was made out of, like, five key elements.
And these will sound familiar to any Captain Planet fans out there.
Earth, fire, wind, water, and not heart, but...
love, which is similar.
Aristotle believed that love made for an attraction which bound everything together. He called this the cosmic embrace.
But of course, as we have learned today, love is more of a culinary spice which really makes for some incredible dishes.
Unlike Aristotle, who believed it would eventually lead us all to the stars, to collide and coalesce into a big ball of mass and energy. And that gives rise to the Big Crunch theory that we have today.
He used his cosmic embrace theory to explain how species know how to procreate.
The rotation of the planets and the stars around the Earth.
And how the center of the Earth is comprised of extremely high-density clusters of unknown creatures.
You know, but it would be more than a couple decades, or possibly even more, before someone disproved Aristotle's theory, and that man was one fabulous astronomer, one of my favorites of all time. Galileo Galilei.
Now, Galileo is a big hero of both Tay and I. Galileo was a fast-talking, hard-drinking savant who revolutionized science across many fields.
He was generally considered to be arrogant, reckless,
methodical,
brash, right all the time.
His colleagues really wanted to hate him, but they couldn't because he seemed to be right about everything all the time, and his brilliance always seemed to be kind of off the cuff, nonchalant.
He was probably the first cool person you could imagine. But when he was 53, he was in what is now South Africa doing research on the stellar map as seen from the southern parts of the world.
The southern hemisphere. One day he was out for a rum-induced walk when an entire bunch of bananas fell on top of him and smashed his head against a rock.
Physicists seem to have a weird relationship with fruit, actually, now that I think about
it. Well, Galileo's really the one who started this.
Getting trendy.
But he remained pinned under the bananas for several hours before he was rescued, luckily, by the local medicine man.
Of course.
Who treated him with special remedies, one of which is believed to be ayahuasca root, which is a very powerful psychedelic.
Just a few months after this incident, Galileo was back on his feet, but despite losing the use of his right hand and experiencing pretty troubling signs of early onset dementia, it was at this time that he began his groundbreaking experiments with gravity.
Now, in order to prove that objects were drawn to one another by animal magnetism, I'm doing air quotes when I say that, he dropped a dog and a cat from the top of the Leaning Tower of Pisa, half a meter apart from one another. Galileo's belief was that by removing the friction of being on the Earth, the dog and cat should move closer to one another before hitting the ground.
His hypothesis proved to be incorrect, but he did subsequently discover that two objects with different masses fall at the same rate, that cats always land on their feet but are not strong enough to withstand a fall from the top of the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and a dog's legs are strong enough to withstand such a fall. However, they rarely land on their feet.
Now, despite killing both his daughter's dog and cat, Galileo's tests were very successful. While he observed the rates of falling, however, he forgot to ask the key question.
Why did they fall in the first place? Now, he was tireless in pursuit of an answer and became known for pushing over strangers in the street in order to demonstrate the irrevocable effects of gravity. Now, this led him to draw many heretical conclusions about the nature of the universe, including the theory of heliocentrism, which brought him a harsh rebuke from the Catholic Church.
Galileo was totally unapologetic.
He was a brash man, as we said.
He was too cocky, too confident. He made a point of ostentatiously worshipping the sun, frequently sunbathing in the nude.
Nudity wasn't even allowed back then, let alone sunbathing publicly.
And as a result of this, he was constantly complaining about sunburn.
This earned him the nickname Peels.
Shortly after his excommunication from the Catholic Church, he died of melanoma.
Poor guy.
His middle finger is still on display in a museum in Florence.
And it is bold, strong, and very, very red. So I recommend going to give it a look-see. But for fear of upsetting the Catholic clergy, which actually plays a big role in science, it was almost two centuries before anybody was brave enough to undertake the task of decoding the mysteries of the physical world. Except one man. Newton. But before we get to that, I think we should take a break and hear a word from one of our sponsors. Thomas Edison loved animals.
Fact. Thomas Edison executed animals, including an elephant, by electrocution as part of a childish smear campaign against Nikola Tesla.
Thomas Edison invented the light bulb.
Fact! Thomas Edison stole the idea and design for the light bulb from an illegal immigrant. An illegal immigrant!
Thomas Edison helped build the American economy and lead the Industrial Revolution.
Fact! Thomas Edison made millions off stolen ideas, never once gave to charity, and paid his employees poorly with no benefits.
Thomas Edison wants me to use direct current.
This is because direct current, which Edison owns all the patents to, is less efficient and more costly to you, the consumer, making him a richer, deaf old coot.
But there is no alternative.
There sure is. Alternating current provides you with a stronger, more efficient, more reliable power source at a fraction of the price, with a fraction of the adverse environmental effects.
Wow. For the first time, I'm hopeful about the future.
When choosing your power, choose clean power. Choose strong power. Choose the alternative. Alternating current.
Paid for by the Nikola Tesla Legacy Reestablishment Foundation. And we are back, and we are talking about Isaac Newton.
Now, Isaac Newton is a fascinating character.
You would think that his past was fiction. We didn't believe it when we read it, but it's apparently all true. It's well documented. There are multiple sources to confirm just these crazy stories. And Kevin couldn't get enough, so please take it
away. I'm a huge fan. So Newton was born a very sickly child to a yarn spinner, Molly Newton, who was widowed just 2 months before giving birth. Oh. When her husband, Bainesman Newton, was killed by pirates. No joke. Pirates.
Wow.
Newton lived on the street with his mother, pickpocketing and performing for spare coins. Now, when Isaac was just 12, though, his mother was put to death for being a witch.
As was tradition at that time.
Isaac was left to fend for himself, completely, and in his hometown of Lincolnshire, he became known as the boy the streets raised. Patches, they called him. For his uncanny ability to sell eye patches. Patches was a scrappy son of a bitch who had a miracle grace on the three-card Monte table, a stone poker face, and was known to break into song. Today, people remember Isaac Newton for his contributions to mathematics and physics, but his colleagues who knew him best claimed that his book smarts were inconsequential compared to his street smarts. When Newton was just 17, I just read this. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. When Newton was 17, he had never once stepped into a classroom, yet he was so charming, savvy, and slick that he talked the admissions board at Cambridge into giving him a full academic scholarship.
Oh, my.
And that was something he did as a bet, which eventually ended up changing his entire life.
Shortly after starting classes, Isaac realized that, you know, he was special. He was a special kid. His ability to retain information, ask questions, and dance was unequivocally better than his peers, and he even found himself taking questions from his professors a lot of the time. Newton, for the first time, saw his prowess, and in order to take advantage of its purity, he took 2 years off from school, bought as many books as he could afford with his gambling winnings, and locked himself in a house he conned his way into owning.
For 2 years, the young Newton only emerged from his house to purchase amenities,
steal the occasional pie,
or try and recreate a moment of pure history from his recently discovered hero Galileo by walking beneath orange, apple, grapefruit, pineapple, and palm trees in hopes of getting some, quote, inspiration from falling fruit. It never happened, though. Mm-hmm. He always seemed to just miss it. But his frustration led to his greatest discovery. When he emerged from his house 2 years later, covered in beard, he held in his hand what would become known as the most important pamphlet ever printed.
Principia. Which described not only the principles of gravity, but also the basic principles of motion, which we'll get into later, as well as a bunch of now disproven theories as to how to predict when and where a piece of fruit will fall from a tree. Newton finally had the math to prove Aristotle was correct, that all objects with mass attract one another, and disprove that it had anything to do with the natural force of love. He also, in this case, managed to prove what Galileo couldn't conceive, probably due to brain damage, which was that the amount of gravitational force is so minuscule, it's hardly noticeable on a small scale.
Which is the mass of an object, A, multiplied by the mass of object B, divided by the distance between the two centers of the two masses, squared, multiplied by the gravitational constant, which we now know is 6.674 times 10 to the 11th, to the negative 11th, which is very small. The publication of Principia was an international sensation, and all around the established world of the time, people of all ages, races, and colors were swept up in gravity mania.
But for the first time in history, on a mass scale, people began to enjoy gravity. on an educational and recreational level by dropping dissimilar objects just to watch them fall at the same rate. The balloon and earliest parachutes were invented, and in Scandinavian countries, gravity-based dark lore was written to frighten readers into imagining a world with selective gravity, where at any moment one could be sucked out of the atmosphere and into the aether. You know, these stories, by today's standard, seem pretty dated. They seem naive. But they've been cited as inspiration for writers like Edgar Allan Poe, H.P. Lovecraft, and they are actually the oldest examples of pulp fiction. The success of Principia was probably the sole reason for the great pamphlet boom of the late 1680s, and is also responsible for Newton's rise and consequential fall from stardom.
Yeah, Newton would soon go on to make breakthroughs in astronomy, physics, and mathematics on his short rise to the top, but as fame and fortune jaded him against the intelligence of the common man, he began to get involved in the occult, going so far as to predict that the world would end in the year 1760, but claiming to do so as a way of igniting thought by popularly disseminating misinformation. Ooh. Newton's comedy stylings were far too ahead of their time, however, and Newton died at age 84 in near obscurity. Many of his scientific breakthroughs and methodologies nearly lost and forgotten as the world that once loved him so much turned their back on him, denying him his genius.
But it wasn't until 40 years after his death that his genius was accepted and was fully recognized, and his laws of both motion and gravity reinstated into common vocabulary and scientific philosophy and research.
So we've gotten to this point. I think it's now time to talk about
Newton's six laws of motion. You might say that there's only three laws of motion, but remember, rules of science are rewritten. Some things are apocryphal. Scientists don't know everything at the time.
Right.
So we kept three of them. Three of them were really solid.
The some first rules are made to be broken.
Yeah, four, five, and six, not so much. So we have number one.
Newton's first law of motion. An object at rest remains at rest, and an object in motion remains in motion unless acted upon by a net external force.
Number two.
The force of an object equals the rate of change of its momentum over time.
And number three.
For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So, as gravity pulls me towards the Earth and myself push back against gravity.
Exactly, that's why you can jump.
Can, but won't. What about the remaining laws?
Well, there's also number four, which states that for every reaction, there's a firm but subdued rebuttal, usually in the form of a comical sound effect or a witty retort from a bystander.
Mm.
For instance, when the apple fell on Newton's head, he was knocked unconscious, and his colleagues at Cambridge, seeing him asleep under a tree, famously remarked, "An object at rest remains at rest." Witty guys.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Now, number five?
Two objects of the same weight in a vacuum will land at different times, depending on when you decide to drop each of them.
This may seem obvious and redundant.
And it is.
But it's important to remember that the laws of physics were murky until someone like Newton came along to put his foot down.
And finally, we have number six, which states that E does not equal MC squared. And the resulting repeal of this law was, as overseen by the results of the Manhattan Project, horrifying, to say the least.
Taylor, how do you repeal a law of physics?
Well, in order to do so, usually you have to get special permission from a head of state or a president or something like that. This was most famously demonstrated by JFK's declaration that America would put a man on the moon by the end of the 20th century.
He actually said by the end of the 60s.
Oh, wow. I didn't... Well, in any case, it was pretty exhilarating, but it was a very unpopular choice. People didn't want a law of physics to be broken, and it eventually led to his execution mere weeks later. You know, I think this is just as good a time as any.
To take a word from our sponsors?
You betcha.
Great! I'm late for my meeting, and now it's raining! My brand new tie is gonna get all wet, and with my luck, this rain's gonna wash away the content of my overhead projector transparencies. If only I had the foresight to bring an umbrella!
Tad Blixum to the rescue!
What was that? Whoa! Where did I get this umbrella from?
Oh, you're welcome.
Tad Blixum!
Yes, it is I, Tad Blixum, proprietor of Tad Blixum's Here I Cumbrella, the very first umbrella store with a delivery service. If you're caught in the rain, sleet, hail, heavy wind, or overwhelming sunshine, call 1-800-UMBRELLA and me, my wife, or one of my lovely daughters, will bring you an umbrella.
I've got a jaunt along the canal with a lady I fancy today, and the blasted sun is shining something fierce. Tad Blixum.
Tad Blixum's Here I Cumbrella also specializes in parasols.
She will love it. Thanks, Tad.
Don't mention it. We also have umbrella stands, beach umbrellas, and even umbrellas.
The Popa needs it to address the people, but it's so bright, and the Popa burns so easy. Tad Blixum!
What's up, Ignatius? You're in luck. This month only, we have an special umbraculum.
You save the day!
My pleasure. And remember, if you're outside and don't like the weather there, fella, pick up the phone and call Tad Blixum's Here at Cumbrella.
Located off exit 24 at the Ridge Avenue Mini Mall.
So, there's a lot of scientific terms that we've been throwing around that seem really common, and one of the more common ones we've thrown around today has been weight. But weight is not the same thing as mass. If you're a scientist, that's a really important distinction.
Oh.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm still a little fuzzy on this, too.
That's all right.
So, okay, let me get this straight. So, in space, where there's very little gravity, I am weightless. And since the sun is in space, I weigh the same as the sun?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You both weigh nothing.
But, Taylor, what if I was as big as the sun?
Oh, see, this is a perfect job for my calculator
watch.
That's
why I got it for you.
Yeah, you really made my Valentine's Day special.
Always. But please, continue.
Well, it's quite simple, really. If we open up my Casio here, we enter in your mass. Now, remember, your weight is different from your mass. Uh-huh. Your weight on Earth is a svelte 165 pounds. But your mass, which is your weight divided by gravity, which is 9.8 meters per second squared, is 3.597 times 10 to the 35th.
Uh-huh.
If we take that and multiply that by the sun's mass, which is 3.579 times 10 to the 35th. To the 35th, we get an extraordinarily large number. It would take too long for me to say here. But if we multiply that number by your atomic mass and divide it by the sun's weight,
which is zero,
we get...
What's wrong?
I don't know. It says I.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Did you keep the receipt?
No.
Oh. Oh, happy Valentine's Day.
Taylor, let's play a little thought experiment. What if the sun was as big as me?
Oh, well, if the sun was as big as you, all the planets would have to bunch in pretty close for warmth.
Right. It's still hot, but it's very small.
Yeah, we and the other planets would also really have to duke it out to get enough gravity.
Why is that? It's not like we need gravity anyway.
Well, you do need some gravity.
Well, let's conduct another thought experiment.
Okay.
What if the Earth was suddenly forced to cope with only a modest amount of gravity?
How much is modest?
Just a few tablespoons.
Oh, well, in that case, chairs would immediately decline in popularity.
No one would tolerate low-ceilinged rooms.
No.
Not that we do anyway.
Cars would probably become obsolete.
Humanity's primary method of transportation would be something fun, like trampoline shoes.
Blimps would probably become obsolete. Hot air balloons, too. Really, any dirigible would be pretty useless in a low-gravity environment.
Cooking would become a serious challenge.
Microwave use would be pretty much compulsory.
I only use a microwave anyway.
All world governments would collapse.
Yeah. Like government gravity is one of the many glues that holds our society together.
Which is why the anti-gravity movement is really, really troubling.
It really is quite a movement.
I gotta say, it freaks me out. Now, anti-gravity is a term that was patented by Twilight Zone creator Rod Serling for the episode In Space, No One Can Hear You Dream.
Now, the term originally described a fictional planet in the episode Shlobos X, which repelled matter.
The episode was said to be, quote, a piss-poor homage to the classic Scandinavian masters of the genre.
Regardless, the concept was given a name.
It was this single word would lead the American government to research the idea until the late 1980s, when the project was shut down after only having the remote-controlled helicopter for a few decades of work and billions of dollars of research. Nevertheless, every year, scientists get together to discuss the state of gravity at the annual Physicists Symposium.
According to its website, the symposium is, quote, an annual event where scientists and mathematicians gather to put down their adding machines and books of telemetry and hash out their differences with the universe in a frank and open form of guesswork and wild, quote, within a quote, what if scenarios, end quote, end quote.
This is where the latest anti-gravity technologies are shown off. It's kind of like the CES of anti-gravity products. So several corporations have already, and in the past, spent billions of dollars on research and development for anti-gravity technologies.
Mostly to no avail. For example, Nike spent a
ton of money on an anti-gravity shoe, which would allow people and athletes to both run faster and jump higher. However, consequently, people's legs were not strong enough to withstand the force of coming back down from Earth after these sometimes 20, 30 feet high jumps.
And they would usually break their legs and suffer terrible paralysis.
Yeah.
Cisco, the food delivery company, apparently attempted to develop anti-gravity food, which would not only nourish you, but, you know, aid in weight loss, make you a svelter kind of person. Unfortunately,
And in hindsight, obviously.
People were not able to keep the food down, and in rare cases, some people even orally expelled their own organs.
Even General Motors spent a fortune to develop a flying car with anti-gravity technology. However, the test vehicles worked so well that mass production would have destroyed the current automobile industry, as well as the oil industry, so all the research, blueprints, prototypes had to be destroyed.
So just like gravity, anti-gravity is pretty easy to demonstrate, but it's really difficult to harness. So we've got a pretty good grasp on gravity, but I know some of you, and even Kevin, are still, you know, you still have some questions about things, and I feel like I'm pretty savvy here. So if you have any sort of, I just want to have a session where Kevin shoots a few what-ifs at me.
Okay, we can't talk about gravity without talking about the most extreme form of gravity,
which is a supermassive black hole.
Oh, I was just gonna say a black hole. What is a supermassive black hole?
A supermassive black hole is just a really, really, really big black hole. It's a black hole that's absorbed other black holes.
That's terrifying.
You might be thinking a black hole is just like a big hole in the universe, but what it really is it's an object, usually a star, that's so big that its gravity ends up sucking in everything around it, even time and light. They are full of energy, and no one really knows what happens when goes into one, but I think I can take a pretty good stab at it.
Taylor, what if I was standing on a supermassive black hole?
Well, before anything else, you would immediately disappear.
But I'd still be there, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. You'd be completely immobilized. You'd be right there. But the time around you would start to disappear, too, and it, too, would be immobilized.
So I'd be immortal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, until I got you.
Thanks.
Well, I mean, like, always, but unfortunately, by the time my space buggy plucked you off the top of the black hole, I'd be far, far, far older. You, however, would be your young, vigorous, fashionable self.
I thought we were talking about gravity, not time.
Oh, we are. Well, when you get to space, they're pretty much the same thing. Light, too.
Sound?
No. There's very little sound in space. It's due to something called the library effect.
I've never heard of it.
I don't think you're supposed to.
Taylor, what about if I was to go for a walk on the sun?
Well, there's a lot of gravity on the sun. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, you wouldn't be able to walk. A simple step would take a team of colossal horses to perform.
Right.
If you were to do something simple, like a slam dunk, it would rip all of your skin off. You would literally leap out of your skin.
Interesting. So, clothes...
Not recommended.
...are not recommended on the sun, not just because it's so hot, but also because something like a fashionable ascot...
Like the one you're wearing.
Thank you very much, would easily break my collarbone.
At a time when Aristotelian physics were the rule of the day, it would be pretty easy to do so. All you'd need to walk on the sun are some pretty thick shoes.
And maybe bribe Apollo.
So what else you got for me? Come on, shoot. I'm on a roll here.
What if I was flying an airplane,
okay,
and it started to go down,
yeah,
and it's plummeting to the earth,
mm-hmm,
but I jump out of the airplane at the last minute? Would I be okay?
You would, but that's really unethical. You're the pilot.
What about the same situation in an elevator?
There isn't really enough room to get a good high jump in an elevator, so I don't think so. You'd come crashing right down.
Yeah. Okay, which is heavier, a pound of feathers or a pound of stones?
Feathers, unless you convert it to metric, in which case it's a trick question. Does that answer all your questions, do you feel?
I literally cannot think of another question about gravity. I think that's...
all of them.
I'm stumped for questions to ask. I think I know everything I need to know.
You and I have really gone over pretty much everything.
Super duper. Well, Taylor, I have got some listener mail for you, which Wonderful. You are going to love.
Mm.
Okay. Dear Tay and Kay, this comes from Bernard Pratt from Des Moines, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Tay and Kay, normally I'm a big fan of the show, but last week's episode of Southern Cooking really upset me.
That's too bad.
Don't worry, it gets better. As a native North Carolinian... who moved to Iowa.
Apparently.
I can't believe you forgot to discuss the great Carolina barbecue sauce conundrum. Mm. I've sent you two bottles of barbecue sauce, one from North Carolina and one from South. Please taste them and tell me which one you think is best. You know the one I'm hoping for, but I'm willing to accept your answer either way. So what we have here is
two bottles of barbecue sauce.
Yeah, one is called North Carolinian Fiery Red Barbecue Sauce, and the other is
South Carolina Slave Slappin' Stinger. It's pretty, you don't want to look at the bottle.
No, but it looks and smells good, so we're just going to give them a taste. I'll try the South Carolina.
Oh, the North Carolina.
Okay.
I liked mine. That was spicy, but
mine was very refreshing.
Is there any left in yours?
No.
Ah, none left in mine either. Well, I guess it's unsettled then. They're both really good.
They're both very good.
I was very happy. If you want to send us another bottle, you should probably send us four next time.
I wish I had another bottle to wash that one down with.
Yeah. Well, here we are.
So thank you, Bernard, very much for writing in. We appreciate you listening, as always.
And we hope you enjoyed today's podcast and that you keep listening despite some unanswered questions that you may be left with. So thanks for listening.
As always.
To Know It All with Tay and Kay. Good job to me, Tay, and you, Kay. I'm Tay.
I'm Kay.
And join us next week when we talk about chess.
This episode of Know It All with Tay and Kay was brought to you by Bridges.